Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to the Stacks Attack. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. S&P futures are pretty flatter this morning. S&P futures are up 9. NASDAQ futures up 93. Well, it's not so flat. We had a move up yesterday despite talks being over and all that kind of stuff. Doesn't seem to matter. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do.
How are you, bud?
I wrote on this yesterday, a couple of days ago, and I've talked about it a bunch over the years. Nobody seems to care. Remember Dennis Hastert?
Yeah.
From Illinois. Remember what he was doing?
I remember him being put in office by somebody who knew he was totally compromised.
Yeah, and remember how far back that compromise went.
Yep.
Right, and what he was doing, okay, rather serious things.
Yep.
And then none of this, of course, becomes public until long after he's out of office.
I don't understand why they went after him after all those years.
Well, okay. Now we have another, just in case you thought that was a one-off.
No.
We have Swalwell.
Yep.
Who, years ago started doing things that most people would find rather reprehensible and quite possibly including people who are underage.
Oh, I didn't hear that part. That too?
Oh, well, the...
How do you have an underage staffer?
The allegation is that the person who filmed a particular act, which that video is now out...
Oh, God.
...was not 18. Okay, which, that's funny. How'd that all happen? By the way, we know that he was diddling Fang Fang, a CCP agent, at least allegedly a CCP agent. That was not enough to get him tossed at the time that came out. That's been known for a while. So... And then we have the recent vote in which only 60 some out of 435 representatives voted in the affirmative to release the payment database of people who have had various assault and other misconduct of the sexual sort. Claims paid through a program that the House of Representatives administers. All of the rest of the representatives voted no. Now, who's pulling the string on this?
As you probably recall, since you've been on the show as long as anybody, that's one of my themes. Who are these people?
Well, we have a from 2008 forward into the present day, we have two things that are absolutely the case and cannot be argued. One of which has been wild-eyed, unlawful acts that have screwed ordinary Americans repeatedly. And we're not talking about policy decisions. We're talking about things that are blatantly illegal. Like, for example, in the early part of 2009, being announced on the floor of the House of Representatives that FASB shall allow companies to lie about asset values, even though this is a statutorily prohibited act. Not just overlook it, actually allow it. And if they don't, Congress will legislate to make it law. Do you remember that?
Yeah, why...
By the way, that was the day the market bottomed.
Let me give kind of a real quick review of the Denny Hastert situation. Denny Hastert was there anybody between... Boy, my brain is getting scattered here. Tom Foley came after, who was the man of the House, the guy from Boston, the Speaker of the House forever, and then he got voted out, actually. Somewhere in there, and then there was Newt. Where in line there did Hastert? Was he after Newt or before Newt?
I'm going to have to look it up. Let's see.
Anyway, he becomes the Speaker of the House, and I never heard of the guy.
Yeah, Hastert was after Gingrich.
So he becomes Speaker of the House. I never heard of the guy. And he's from Illinois, and I'm thinking, boy, I'm not somebody that's a Powell butt sniffer, but I'm thinking, how does the guy be that high up the chain? I haven't heard about him. He's from Illinois. It turns out he's from the western suburbs.
Right.
And he gets in there. And all of a sudden, he's there for a while, and then he's out, and they had some kind of all these allegations, and then all of a sudden, years later, the only thing I remember is he was able to get a exit on the new, being constructed, 355 interstate, like the western outer band from the tri-state. And he got an exit near where he just bought property.
Yeah.
Go figure. But then he gets out and he's got this scandal because he's taking money out of his bank account. So they track the cash. It turns out he's paying somebody off to not say that he had this problem when he was a wrestling coach or something, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was playing with boys while he was a wrestling coach, apparently. Yeah. I mean, that's the allegation anyway.
That's the allegation. So we had our Thursday guy, Wayne, on, and he goes, everybody in Washington suspected something. I go, how the hell did you do that? And he goes, well, every year people, you get to take two, I'll say, learning trips, I won't call them boondoggles, from Congress. You get to go to Africa, say, or you get to go to Israel, or you get to go someplace where you may be working on something in a committee and actually want to go see the place. Well, they have trips, right? And I think they're mostly educational. And most people, if they're in Congress, try and see as many places as they can. I don't know that for sure, but I think that's what Wayne was intimating. And he said, well, Hastert and this other guy from California always went to Thailand.
Yeah.
He goes, so everybody knew, what do you get in Thailand?
What was he doing in Thailand?
What was he doing in Thailand?
And, duh, right.
So the question is, he was essentially put there by somebody.
Right.
Now who's the somebody?
Now here's the best part. All right, you want to know what one of the best parts of this is? Is that after Hastert leaves, and not all that long after he leaves, by the way, supposedly leaves anyway. What was made illegal?
I don't know, the boondoggles?
No.
Not messing with little boys and your wrestling coach, that was always illegal.
No. Alright, so specifically, extraterritorial laws passed in the late 1990s and early 2000s. In 2003, which, by the way, Hastert was still the speaker, okay, protected a law. There was a law called the Protect Act that allowed nations to prosecute citizens for sexual crimes against minors committed abroad.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I guess that makes sense.
And here's the thing. All right, so here's the challenge. In many nations, you know, nations and states, for that matter, have differing ages of consent. All right. So what constitutes an unlawful sexual relationship? Well, it depends on where you are. All right.
Is any of this thing, any of this stuff against the law in Thailand?
Well,
probably. I don't know.
Well, so anyway, essentially, what the Protect Act did was criminalize the crossing of an international boundary to do something that would be illegal in the United States, but isn't illegal somewhere else. Okay, so the act of as a U.S. citizen going outside the United States in order to do something you couldn't do here, in that regard. Is, I mean, you know, in general, in order for something to be prosecutable, it has to be illegal where it happens, right? I mean, in general. Well, it's not in a lot of places. So, you know, depending, of course, on who you're, you know, obviously if it's six-year-olds it is, but... For many of the, you know, there's was a very large tourism business for men who wanted to be creeps going outside the United States.
Well, I'll bet other places. I just lobbed this one out there. I'll bet the age is not 18. I bet it's like 16 or 15.
Well, that's exactly
it's,
right.
It's not six, I doubt, but it's
no. But that's exactly the point, though, Chief. No, but that's exactly the point, Chief. Is that. This was a booming category of tourism for quite a long period of time.
Why would somebody... this is me talking, maybe an old grumpy Southsider, but... you know, it's not like I didn't have a pulse at one point. Why would I have to fly around the world to find a 17-year-old? Because 18-year-olds were too old for me? What are we talking about here?
Oh, there. You know, this whole thing... The who knows? I mean,
besides, you
know,
if you're 35, what do you want an 18-year-old for anyway? What's the point?
Well, okay, there's all sorts of things like that.
Right? I know. I mean,
but
I mean,
but you know, disgusting. I mean, this is yeah. But
when you're 18, it's okay. But when you're 35, what's the point?
Well, I just I think the thing about this is. That the essence of it is that it's not consensual because it's prostitution.
Right.
Okay. I mean, if you think about it, you know, a 18-year-old or a 20-year-old that wants to sleep with a 35-year-old in the United States, you know, you may say that's kind of creepy, but there's any money changing hands, right? It's not a commercial act. This is.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, that's, you know, there's an element of difference there that means something. But here's the insanity of you know, of that sort of thing to begin with, aside. The point here is that out of the members of Congress that we have today, the vast majority of them, a supermajority, sufficient to override a presidential veto, regardless of the party, has no interest in outing who they actually represent. And who they actually represent isn't the people of the United States who voted them into office.
No.
We do not have, and by the way, if you want to know where all the different elements of corruption, okay, most of which are wild-eyed felonies, why nobody's interested in actually doing anything about it, it's right there.
Well,
if you want to know why
there's about six or seven people that do this show that are very interested, and yet we have about as much, we're about as useless as me peeing in Lake Michigan when it comes to getting any of it changed.
Well, yeah, I mean, but here's,
well, I mean, I guess here, we flip this around just a hair.
Okay.
When there's nothing but money going, we see, you know, Barack Obama making it into the presidency with seemingly everybody in front of him falling out of the way. Little strange, nothing you can really put your finger on. unless you dig. And you see these things one after another. These sort of little strange. How the hell did Hastert get in there? How did this guy get in there? How did this lady get in there? And then you see something like this Epstein thing, and not from the sexual part of it, which is where everybody's focused, but on the money laundering and the money that goes back to Maxwell.
All I ever do is chase money.
Is all that stuff goes back to, and Wayne's probably our expert on that, but still, it's why, when you have people like Elon Musk all over the place, when you have this...
By the way, how many baby mamas and children does he have?
Oh, I think it's like 9 or 10, isn't it?
It's a relatively large number.
So now you've got Trump's son-in-law all of a sudden being an ambassador. Well, that family goes back to God knows what sort of international crap to Jewish
really?
People.
No.
I mean, the idea that we've let the money and the insiders, it's not like it always sort of wasn't like that. I mean, I'd like somebody, I don't know, somebody who goes back and does nothing but research this stuff, maybe somebody like Wayne or Andrew. Is the influence today more than the Cabots and the Lodges and those kinds of people used to be in the 50s and 60s and 40s? You know, I don't know. I mean, it seems to me they didn't own newspapers. Or maybe they influenced places and so forth. I mean, the guy that owned the Tribune might have been the horse's ass, but he was an independent guy. He wasn't a family, but also was a politician. I mean,
right.
I mean, there's degrees of this. You're trying to figure out. I mean, right now, actually, I was listening to one of those things in Boston Legal. Alan Shore's ranting and raving at some judge about, we think we have a democracy, yet the two people vote. We have no real choice, really, into the two people are, or the five people that start out running, because some people always fall out. We don't know why they fell out. Some people get money, some people don't, and it doesn't look like the people who get the money are any smarter than the people who don't. And he's saying that it is absolutely not run by, you know, the people. Of course, the people, in they're dumb enough to not even go vote. So, you know, you do have people like in Chicago elections, the mayor who wins the primary might actually only get 90,000 votes out of 3 million people, which isn't that's, you know, that's people's fault at that point, because you do have a choice when there's 10 people running. And so, you know, it seems like there's blame all the way down the line, but, I mean, the money is, I mean, I think we are absolutely 80% of the way to a plutocracy, because you have an awful lot of...
Well, I think we're 100% of the way there, but the
biggest problem... how many people do you talk to on one side or the other, depending on what their political stuff, all they believe is what they've been told. They've never once said, oh, man, the Republicans said this, or the left said this. I'm going to just kind of dig through here and see if it seems like it's correct. And every time you look, you're stunned at basically the BS you hear.
Well, Chief, okay, so you take a look at what's happened with the so-called media. That column that I have up this morning just points at a handful of things in the so-called tech world over the last few years. And I'll just quickly two examples. So you no longer have a bunch of independent publishing houses that print paper books. They're essentially all gone.
Yep.
Other than the trade paperbacks that are, you know, mushy romance novels that you might buy to, you know, sit on an airplane with, right? And not very many of them, but, you know, that's pretty much all that's left. Okay. Amazon essentially destroyed that business, for all intents and purposes, with, among other things, becoming the distribution hub for such things, and the Kindle. All right, so, you know, electronic book, right? All right, Amazon has now decided that their older versions of these devices will no longer be updated.
Therefore, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, therefore, anything that you have on there, if anything occurs that, you know, you have to reset it or whatever have you, or it's battery pukes or whatever have you, all that content's gone. It's literally gone. And on top of that, Amazon has in the past, and reserves the right to, remove things from your device that you bought. Now, they could remove it or they could change it. Now, it was, for most of recorded history, throughout the world, when somebody from Gutenberg forward, okay, published something, it was on a piece of paper. And if you wanted to destroy it, you had to have a book-burning bonfire like Hitler did.
One of my listeners years ago says, Chief, next time you're at a garage sale or something, buy yourself a Webster's from like 1970 because
yeah,
if you don't have it in your hot little hand, all those definitions are going to change.
Well, okay, as just one of many examples, the word vaccine has been changed several times over the years. The definition of a vaccine is a preparation that induces sterile immunity in a person to a particular condition or disease. That's the definition.
Not anymore.
Now, it doesn't have to make you immune.
A flu shot's now a vaccine, according to these
people. A flu shot is, according, yes. Not only does it not have to make you immune from getting sick, it doesn't have to prevent you from passing it on to someone else.
Hey, Kevin's been texting this guy. He's obviously listening in, and he's saying this guy's Swalwell was kind of a creep all along, but I don't know how the primary system works for governor out there. Is what's his name can't run again? Gavin Newsom?
I think the issue is that he's term limited out or something. I'm not sure exactly how it works in California. Yeah.
But evidently, they must have a primary race like here where anybody can get in the primary. And he said that there's two Democrats up at the top.
Right. Swallows so basically the way it works out in California is it, unlike most states, the two top candidates end up on the ballot.
It's like Mayor of Chicago went that way, too.
So it's entirely possible to have two Democrats, okay, and no Republicans.
Well, he claims that they were splitting the vote, and they wanted him out, and all he wouldn't leave out, and all of a sudden this stuff surfaces out of the blue that's been there for years.
Right. So basically he's no longer useful being blackmailed to be in Congress.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is, when you get down to it, this is the problem, all right, is that what this has pulled back the curtain on, which nobody wants to talk about, nobody's having a conversation about this at all. Everyone's talking about, that evil SOB, and they want him out of the race for governor. Really, that's not the story. The story is that for the last decade, remember, this is the guy who went after Kavanaugh on what was later proved to be an entirely fabricated set of sexual assault allegations. Was later proved that they were made up.
The big lie.
And in fact, there were threats to prosecute the chick who did it because she apparently didn't do it on her own, along with a couple of other people who then supposedly, me too, right? One of whom was conclusively proved couldn't have occurred. Okay, so it wasn't a he said, she said kind of thing. It was conclusively proved that was BS. And yet, Swalwell was one of the people leading that charge to make damn sure guy doesn't get on the Supreme Court.
It's always the people, I don't know, you didn't have a Catholic number. Did you read the Scarlet Letter?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's always the people who, have a gay brother or sister or something, or are gay themselves, that are always the most against gay people or something.
Yeah, isn't it funny how that works, right? So, I mean, but the real question here, Chief, and where this needs to go, and it's not going to, because the people in this country are stupid and deserve everything they get, good, hard, and by the way, it is a cactus and it has no lube on it, and you know where it's going.
Well, it's not that people are that... The education has changed.
I'm sorry, Chief. Yes, they are, because the reality is there should have been a revolution 50 years ago over this crap.
I don't disagree. I just look at people around me and how their days are going. Every month, every 6 months, their finances are a little worse.
A little?
Yeah, a little worse. Hey, I think Kenny's on with Maria this morning, so I don't think he's around in 15 minutes. So we'll get Joel. Okay. I'll go to Joel, and then you come on, baby. Yeah, it's such an amazing undertaking to turn this around. I mean, I watched the talk about influence. I'm listening to this lady's writing this book about this whole thing about why we're fighting Iran, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And,
okay.
Well, okay. So, I mean, the New York Times ran with this article, and she seems to have a source of some kind, which Trump is all pissed off about. Netanyahu and his guys come and give his massive massive presentation.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
In the Situation Room, when I'm going.
Right.
And then, Tucker Carlson, which I'm not, I've listened to him something lately. There's always been rumors that Clinton made some policy decision right about the Monica Lewinsky thing, and the rumors always have been that the Mossad or whoever was leading Israel at the time threatened to expose Clinton with the Lewinsky stuff.
That's not a surprise.
And now his point is the same thing happening here with Trump and Epstein?
Probably.
And
can I prove it? No.
It's so horrifying that anybody would essentially kill people to save their ass like that, literally. I can't judge myself, but I mean, at some point, everybody's got to go, I can't do that. I mean, we have absolutely zero morals except the almighty dollar here, or what? Or your reputation?
Excuse me.
I'm not saying that's true or not. I mean, I have no idea.
How many times do you, as I've pointed this out a few times, and this is, I wrote a column about this the other day, too. I said, when this latest, let's go to Islamabad and have a powwow, try to resolve this thing. I put up a thing and I said, so the market's going to open on Sunday, right? The futures, they're going to trade Sunday night. This thing blew up. There's obviously, futures no likey, right? All right, who's going to stay up all night and basically fade this thing? Because the taco trade is still on. Pavlov's dog has not been has not had his nuts removed.
Well, the Nasdaq futures are up 700 points from the opening Sunday night.
I said, by the way, the problem with this is if you're thinking about doing this at 5 o'clock Central, 6 Eastern when they reopen, I said the problem is I hope you got a good espresso machine or a big pot of coffee, because the problem that comes with doing this is it works until it doesn't, and if you're not awake and willing to put up with the thin liquidity, which means that you could get gapped over and screwed, okay, to within an inch of your life, God forbid you go to bed, right, and then somebody unleashes a nuke in the middle of the night or something like this, right?
Well, something could always happen, but we have...
But you know what? The trade was, you go long on that spike down that first came in, and I pointed out that this is this has been the pattern. All right,
Carl, we have a few people.
This has been working now for the last three, four weeks.
For those that don't know, I mean, PTI has several things we do for people. One of which, we manage stuff. We also have people that do some of their own, and we do some stuff where if they want to do covered rights and some of their stuff, whatever it is. And then we also have people that use our IB platform that they just do their stuff, and as long as they don't go too crazy or overboard, they really don't want to talk to anybody. And that's the whole deal, right? So, but we probably have, I won't say how many, but we have people that absolutely just fade all this stuff. And I can't even begin to go how much money they're making. And every time they do it, I might shake my head going, is it going to work the 20th time in a row? And then it does. I mean, It wouldn't be me. It's a good thing they're not talking to me, because I would say just to them just what you told me. Hey, it works until it doesn't, and when it doesn't, you got to probably it works every time. In the last 3 weeks, we probably had 5 nights.
I know
where the news was horrible. We opened down and it did nothing. There wasn't a downtick till next day at 3 o'clock.
And you know what? I got up yesterday after putting that up on Sunday night, and I got up yesterday, and I'm like, and I didn't have anything on, to do that, right? But now I'm, you know, what 50 handles in the hole. I'm, you know, they say don't ever short the hole, right?
Well, I mean,
well, but you don't ever want to be on the other side by the run either, 50 handles late. And so I'm sitting here going, you got to be kidding me. I mean, maybe I should have taken my own advice and left the coffee pot going. I don't know. But
what did we open? We opened down in the NASDAQ. We opened down 2-something. We finished up 350 or something, or 4?
Yeah, but we were, I mean, but the...
These are futures, by the way.
Yeah, the ES futures, though, were, you know, had moved 50 handles in the, yeah, you know, in the overnight session, right? So, I mean, I'm chasing a 50-handle run if I decide to get into that. So, anyway, we got Joel.
All right, go hang a bit, because Kenny's on with Maria. So, Joel, how are you, buddy? We have Joel. Joel, unmute thyself.
Unmute thyself. My wife wished she had a mute-unmute button on me. How you doing, Chief?
Ah, your wife's happy we got to see Michigan in Indianapolis.
You know what? There might be no one more happier than her.
Good.
She loves his team. She made reservations in Indy in November, which everyone says, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's jinx. And then she was the one working StubHub and everything, and just a good team. I mean, I know there's Michigan fans and there's Michigan haters out there, but, man, you just have to admire what Dusty Moore has done in 2 years.
Yep.
You took a team to 8-24 all the way to the championship, and 4 of the 5 starters on that team were not even on the team last year.
Well, see, some people think that's great. Some people think that's abhorrent.
Chief, I mean, are you surprised that this is the way the college basketballs went?
Well,
I'm not
surprised because of the money involved. I am surprised that somehow an awful lot of people, a lot of them are my best friends, are still lost in some kind of mental limbo. Where, you know, it's kind of mostly the old way with a little bit of something. No, it's not. We're talking about a professional team. Let's just call it that and act accordingly. No, but what's the point?
I mean, are these other schools conducting themselves any different than the way the SEC has for the past 2 decades?
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's going to be 60 schools, 70 schools, whatever the number happens to be, that are going to essentially have a professionally sponsored, professionally sponsored team, and the ramifications run by everybody. And the thing that there aren't a whole lot of things that set me apart from people smart wise.
They're coming to get you, Chief.
Yeah, I know. But one thing that my education and several of my graduate classes were, whatever the answer was, there was never just. Friedman was like this, and a few other people. It was never, here's what you're going to do. What happens? They would just give you a policy, whatever it is, some crummy policy, economic, and they'd say, work this through for like the next 20 years of what it's going to do. Well, so we were forced to learn. No man can do one thing. You put a toilet in the middle of the street where you have to expect somebody to use it at one point, right? I mean, whatever it is, there's stuff that comes afterward, right? I mean, once you go down this road, you're down the road. What does education even mean anymore? I mean, the kid is a senior. It's his fourth school in 4 years.
Some of these guys are going
4 years, you can only go one a year, I think.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, what are we talking education here, aren't we? I mean, simple stuff like, if you're paying somebody $500,000 a year, does it even matter how many scholarships you give out? Because the kid can pay for his own education. Now you can't really allow walk-ons because the walk-on could be paying for his own education. You could have 25 guys in a basketball team. So now you have to go to a roster, like a pro team. So once you do one thing, you can sort of just follow it down the road, can't you? I mean, if you want to. If you don't want to, well, then you don't. But if you want to, you're sitting there, okay, is education even a part of this? Now, I was with a guy last Saturday night who was on the board of one of the, very nice high school here in Chicago. It has a good athletic program. And he's telling me now the big issue with a lot of these kids is they think they're any good. They all want to graduate before December of senior year. Now, you wouldn't think that was an issue. But now every college wants the kid for spring practice because all these kids think they're going to play as freshmen, right? So, so I don't know if colleges are now taking kids that don't have their degree, giving them the extra, you know, three high school credits somewhere in addition to their first few college credits, and if they're covering that, you know, if kids just say, well, if you don't give me a degree, I'm leaving anyway, that's probably next, right? Why wouldn't it be? I mean,
Chief, with the education part,
I mean, it's not. It's not even there. Nobody cares.
I mean, that hasn't been a part of the equation for a long time. So,
I mean, you're not going to have, Ricky Garcia, our producer, Michigan or Notre Dame star guard, going first year, rocks and jocks. F, you know. I mean, we're not going to put his academic thing on there. First year he was in underwater basket weaving, 0.00. Second year in another school, 0. I mean, we're not going to do that. So nobody cares if Ricky. Does anybody care if Ricky ever went to school?
No.
You know, so that's changed. So if once it's a pro, just act like you're a pro. Now, I think that somebody is going to be able to, if I graduate, or I don't have to graduate, if I'm a junior, I go into the NFL draft or the NBA draft, and I don't make the team, why can't I come back to college and take my senior year and play? Why can't I
think one guy tried that. I think a guy from Baylor's already tested those waters.
Well, why? But I mean, what are they going to say? Oh, no, you're now a pro? You were a pro when you were here. What's the difference?
That's an excellent point. Well, Chief, I'm up against the clock here.
All right. So are you bullish?
This market's incredibly resilient. They're anticipating good things to come out of the negotiations. Supposedly, there's another round going on. I don't want to say that this is a gift up here where we're trading to long-term investors because this market just keeps going, Chief.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have an explanation, and I'm not, you know, don't fight the Fed, don't fight the trend, don't fight a war, I guess is something that we could add to that. So always happy to come on with you, Chief, and as once again a proud Wolverine, go Blue.
Yeah, take care, buddy.
Okay, talk to you next week.
Carl?
Yeah.
I have a comment because Joel had to go regarding his last statement about there's always this esoteric kind of comment, especially, you know, those like Joel and I are in the industry, okay? So people are always going to call you and say, hey, why is the market up? Why is the market down? Which, of course, nobody really knows, right? I mean, you make somewhat of it as a big announcement, you can make somewhat of a stab at it. But I'm going to say, and I know I beat this dog up a little bit, but look at what our Fed has done. And remember back to COVID.
Oh, yeah.
We were in a depression for a year, weren't we? Nobody's working. Nobody's doing anything.
Well, we were in a self-imposed depression.
Right, but we were in one. And the market, except for the first couple of weeks, essentially went straight up.
Yes, it did.
Because our Fed put 40% more money than we had before into the system over 18 months.
And by the way, your cost of living went up 40%.
Without a doubt. Now, I've been looking lately. You can't get the money supply weekly, but you can get it monthly. And Hal's been tracking this on a weekly basis, which you can get in arrears.
Right.
And so last month that was published, where are we? April, so it would have been February. This is like even before the war started.
Right.
The month over month, if you multiply it by 12, gets you to 10.5%.
Yep.
You have a 1% CPI number if you took it the unadjusted.
But by the way, across 3 months, you do realize that you have to take that, if you're going to take an average, you have to do that to the 12th because it compounds.
Right.
So it's compounded. It's not just multiplied by four.
Well, that's right. I mean, you're going to do it.
Right.
You take too much, you multiply by six. I mean, you know.
But it's not, no, it's not multiplied. It's compounded, because if your inflation goes up 1% this month, it was from last month's price level that it went up the 1%.
Right.
So it's a compound function.
Well, if it goes up another 1% the next month from this month, it's 2.1 or 2 from...
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's not 2, it's 2.1 or 2.2.
Right.
Yeah, and so...
Well, the simple way I do it, we don't even do that anymore.
No, I know.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, but you and I, that's what we see at the grocery store.
Well,
by the way, now, you know, of course, what you're going to hear is, oh, happy days are here again because gas is down 15 cents.
If they were to take, whenever they talk about inflation, they just take gas out of the conversation, but
well,
they don't. I mean,
I mean, you know, they say, oh, well, you know, food and energy. However, unfortunately, everybody has to buy both of those, right?
Well, so then the one thing you do get weekly, which I'm sure if our man ever saw that we were getting it, he'd stop it. We get the Fed balance sheet.
Right.
Well, weekly. The last 6 weeks, they put $80 billion on the balance sheet.
Well, where'd they get the $80 billion?
They made it up.
No. What'd they do to get the $80 billion?
They printed it.
No, they didn't. What'd they buy?
They bought bonds.
Oh, where'd they get the bonds?
Well, they buy them from other people.
Okay, but where'd they get the bonds?
Well, they buy them from the Fed, obviously.
Oh,
well, not directly, but indirectly.
So the Treasury is the source of the thing they exchanged for the money that went in the system.
No.
Really?
They can't do that.
But they did that. That's what they do.
Okay. It's worse than that, because
of course it is. But I'm saying, where's the source of?
Okay,
if there's no deficit spending, what's the Fed have to print?
Okay. What happens is, say it's that's why you want to be a prime dealer.
Really.
So for the listeners, the mechanism in this, and I'm not a prime dealer or anything, but the Fed cannot buy directly from the Treasury. Or at least who knows if they obey that rule, but...
Well, that's correct. They get it from the primary dealers, yes.
Well, no, the Treasury goes out, and when you see these bond auctions,
yeah,
they're going to go out and they're going to drop, you know, $50 billion in 10-year or some whatever crap
right.
it is. So these people know how much they're going to sell.
Yes.
Right? So they arrange people and essentially get ahead of it.
By the way, it's even more insidious than that. The TBAC meets and tells the Treasury what tenors to issue.
Well, they also get paid a commission for this, which is even more.
Well, I understand
yeah.
that, but so but I'm saying they actually tell the Treasury what maturities and
right.
what mix their people that, and they themselves wish to purchase.
Well, yeah, because the auctions, there'll be a 7-year auction on a Thursday and a
right.
I mean, so it's anyway. But then the Fed, they'll go in the open market, tell the same people they want
yeah.
to buy the stuff, get paid commissions again, and buy it back.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's kind of crazy, but that's what they do. But I'm saying that the weird fly in the ointment, other than the fact that the guy doesn't like anybody, I can't imagine a Fed chairman doing exactly what the guy wants as much as Powell is doing for this guy.
Well, yeah, and by the way, but at the same time, he's yelling that Powell isn't doing what he wants.
Yeah, and I don't know, is that just...
Which, of course, is not true.
I mean, if Powell were to say, I'm not doing any of that, we would have a real problem with this war. Financing.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, here's... I mean, when you do what they're doing... Okay, and they've been doing it continually. I mean, you know, I put that graph up a little while ago, Fed funds rate versus deficit spending as a percentage of GDP. Okay, a pretty simple piece of information. It's right there on Fred. You can't argue with it. It's all facts. Okay, when you have a short-term interest rate below the monetary destruction that is being deliberately put in place by Congress through deficit spending, when that happens, that's pure robbery out of your pocket in the difference. And by the way, the people who can get that rate, which is not you and I, right, are being paid to transact without doing anything useful with the money.
Well, plus the banks get a nice interest rate. Well, and reserves, and they're coming out with good earnings. Duh.
Well, but again, they're being paid even though they're not doing anything useful with the funds. Okay, I mean, the entire point of allowing a reserve, you know, a fractional reserve-based lending system is to incentivize people to use the funds for something useful that they otherwise would have to save first. I mean, that's you know, the classical economic reason to do this, right? Well, all right, so let's pervert this. By the way, who is pulling that chain?
Well, it's the same question we had earlier.
We talked about that with Swalwell, right?
Yeah.
Who's pulling his chain? All right, who's pulling this chain? And by the way, since, you know, this is one of the reasons, Chief, that I have pointed out for a long time, that the idea that this isn't something that should be criminalized at a level that get people dragged out in the middle of National Mall to meet the gallows.
The only problem
right
is you can't find, you don't know who the people are. That's the problem.
Oh, okay, well, guess what? The idea that if I only, you know, if I steal a penny at a time from everyone's passbook savings account, all right.
Which they used to do, by the way.
Which people used to do that, right? And you know, he'll never notice right up until someone does. However, across all of those people that you did that to, it's millions of dollars.
Yep.
All right. Now, you do this kind of thing to everybody. Oh, you know, this policy is really not all that bad. Oh, really? Why is your car insurance doubled? All right. Why is it that we have...
part of the car insurance doubling is that the price of the cars and to fix them is doubled.
Hello?
Yeah.
Why did that happen? Right?
Yeah.
Right. Now, take another example. We have... By what percentage has medical spending, just in Medicare and Medicaid, just there, because it's easy to count, because you can look it up anytime you want, right, in the MTS. By what percentage has that expanded over the last, you know, 10 years? A stupid amount, right? Same thing with things like college tuition, all right? By the way, let's look at results. And we can objectively look at results. Where is the largest area of expansion within the medical system come? It's been within cancer. All right, this is where every pharmaceutical company targets. Why? Because there's a lot of money there. Duh, if you
$50 grand for some of the chemo treatments.
Well, but again, duh, if you have it and don't do anything, we know what the outcome is going to be, right?
Yep.
So there, and boy, does that kind of fear drive people's behavior? Okay, justifiably.
But it's also at that point, it's not their money.
Well, I understand that. All right, but here's the thing: we keep hearing these people saying that we've made these great strides, we've made these great advances. Okay, explain this one to me. From 2000, leave out the years of the crazy when there's all sorts of excuses made that no one was going for screening, whatever have you, right? Leave that out of there and take a look at this. The gross number of people, not age-adjusted mortality, not da-da-da-da, gross number of people. Dead bodies are easy to count. Gross number of people across all the major cancer groups have gone up.
Yep.
And here's the reality. That right there is proof it don't work. If I find it 5 years earlier, before I would have otherwise found it, you live much longer after you die. No, the only reason you live longer is that we found it earlier and we put you on the train and took all your money. We didn't actually change the outcome. You still died of it. So all we did was make you miserable for those years by stuffing, you know, whatever in you. And we had absolutely, on net, we didn't benefit anybody. Now, some people, of course, that's not to say that, you know, anecdotes are powerful things. That's not to say some people didn't get a benefit. Some people didn't have a good outcome. Some people did, because they did. However, for everybody that had that happen, somebody else was miserable for 5 years and then died of it anyway, right?
Yeah. Hey, just it, as a, since we don't normally bring up the Fed balance sheet, because it's not as clean of a thing as M2 or interest rate.
No, it's
rate.
Not.
But you can tell by looking at it, essentially the policies of the time by going back and review. We, the U.S. of A, was roughly in the mid 4 or 5 trillion balance sheet all the way, say, 17, 18, 2018. It actually started to drop down in it because they were trying to lower it a little bit. So by
right.
by August of 2019, it was down to 3.7 trillion. Then it started to creep up. And finally, right about February 2020, right before COVID, was back up to this 4.1 number. Well, COVID happens. They pour money in the system. Now, M2 is a better check because it actually gives you the number, because M2 picks up not only what the Fed is doing, but if the economy is going up and people are increasing like marginal, the money supply is going to go up on its own. See, you really want to know that number too, rather than the balance sheet. But still, the balance sheet's an indicator. So from February of 2020 to June of 2020, $3 trillion.
Yeah.
These are all the checks that came out to people.
It's almost a double.
Yeah, it's almost a double. And then it actually dropped a little after that, very little, and then crept up to where the tippy top was about $8.9 trillion in April 13th of 2022, so roughly 2 years later.
Yeah.
So then from there, starts to come down, and it's down to 8.3 in March 8th of 2023. I don't remember this, Carl, but in the next 2 months to March of 2023, it spikes back up to 8.6. What was that all about? I forget that. There was something happening in 23, and all of a sudden, and now it's dropping. And every month, you know, the Powell announced the balance sheet. We're draining off the balance sheet. We're going back to essentially normal.
Normal, by the way, was about $800 billion for quite a long time.
Okay, but they got all the way down here, and and on Wednesday, December 3rd, 2025, $6.5 trillion. Now we're back up. In how many months? We're April of 2026. We're back up to 6.7.
Right.
So essentially, we were up, you know, $200 billion. We're up $80 billion in the last 6 weeks, so we're you know, it's not like a COVID thing, but there's definitely money getting poured in. So you look at that, look at the CPI, and you look at M2. The market being up is not necessarily because people feel good about the blockade of the strait,
right?
If we double the amount of money in the system. At that point, we're not pricing the market, we're pricing the dollar. The market will double. But is it worth any more compared to other stuff? No.
Right.
Compared to the dollar, yes, because we're dropping the value of the dollar. I just wish more people would get on board with this. More people were on board with this in the early 80s because it got slammed into them for 14 years. That's what the Fed was doing, that's what caused the inflation. Finally, most people had a clue. And now, in the years since, everybody's forgotten totally that, the whole mess, I think.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that to me is quite a surprise about this whole thing with the blockade is, you know, Iran was basically saying, well, only people we like can come through the strait, right? And then Trump says, oh, no, you want to play that game, fine. Nobody comes through that is docking anywhere.
You know, it's only people we like.
well, no, it's even worse than that. It's nothing. It's a blockade, which is anything coming to or from your ports. We forced to turn around or we're going to blow it up. All right. And, you know, I mean, that's what a blockade is. All right. Now, blockade's an act of war. Of course, we already have a war going on. So, okay, yeah. Fine. However, here's the problem.
The war was supposed to last a week.
Okay, but understand this, Chief. The entity, the other nation, that has been buying and transacting with Iran for the last several years when it comes to energy supply and such, since we laid this last set of sanctions on them when this whole thing started, has been China. Now, we turned a couple of ships around that, you know, China, like a lot of, like Russia, gee, great guys, both of them, have been doing a lot of hinky stuff with flags of convenience and changing port registries for, you know, where is this ship? Who actually owns this ship? Where is it from? Da-da-da-da-da. Okay, fine. That stuff, you're already breaking the rules from an IMO perspective, from, you know, from a trade perspective, from, you know, international waters and all this. And from all those perspectives, if you're doing that kind of stuff, you're already playing games when you're doing this dark ship stuff. However, you have to expect that the Chinese government is going to send one of their firm's tankers under their flag into an Iranian port with a detachment of Chinese Marines on it. Because the act of what we are doing now legally is piracy. And oh, by the way, are we really going to threaten to seize or sink a Chinese flagged vessel with a detachment of Chinese Marines on board?
Well, I think, in my opinion, and I know we have some people on the show that think that there's some thought behind this, I think we're making it up as we go along. We don't know.
Well, I, you know, if you're not, you know, if the people that are behind, you know, you got a president that does this, but he doesn't actually execute on this stuff. The people in the, you know, in the armed forces are the ones that execute on this, right? The guy at the bridge of the destroyer. And if these guys haven't thought this one out and said, okay, what are the rules of engagement when we radio this guy?
We haven't thought this through at all.
Oh, and you know, oh, by the way, turn around. And he says, up yours, Mr. American.
Are you prepared to go out on a limb and say that in the last however many years that we haven't liked the Iranians, which is like a long time, that no Iranian oil has never gotten here?
Oh, and absolutely, I'm sure it absolutely has. And, oh, by the way, that's the whole thing about this whole dark ship stuff, right? Is you conceal where it's registered, you turn your AIS off, you're doing transfers at sea, you're doing...
Except the thing is pretty damn big to be hiding.
Well, Chief, you'd be shocked at what goes on out there, okay? I mean, when I had my large boat...
I mean, if you had a tanker in the middle of Lake Michigan, it's not like somebody's not going to see it.
Well, Chief, I had a couple of instances when I had my large fishing boat. Okay, we used to go 100 miles offshore to fish on a somewhat regular basis. It was back in the...
You had to go 100 miles to kill some poor fish?
It wasn't a poor fish. We were after swords, and they like very deep water, okay? And by the way, you fish for them at night, too, which makes it, you know, fun in addition, because, the sea is so vast and thy boat is so small. Certainly applies here, especially when you're well beyond the sight of land. I had a couple of instances where, out of the middle of nowhere, I've got a vessel that pops up, does not answer hails on the radio, all right? And the first notice that I have it's there is when it shows up on the radar. Now, everything of that kind of size is supposed to be running AIS, which is an automated transponder system, much like you have on aircraft. And you had these guys out there, and this is commercial traffic. This was not military. You know, because eventually you can see it, right? It gets closer so you can actually see the boat. This is exactly what the blankety blank they're doing, and whether this is. And by the way, if they're not answering hails, it's probably because there's nobody on the bridge. All right, now that's even. I mean, think about that.
You got to have somebody on the bridge going through Hormuz.
Well,
you got to stay in the channel, for God's sake.
I'm sure going through Hormuz there is, but all I'm saying, Chief, is you'd be shocked at how often very large commercial vessels are running around in the oceans and there is nobody at the helm.
How is that even possible?
You'd be stunned at how often that happens.
You mean the thing is on autopilot and everybody's asleep?
Well, of course it has an autopilot, but I'm
you wouldn't get
right
me
now
to sleep on that thing if nobody was driving it,
Chief. If something like that runs you over, you won't even know he hit you.
Yeah, but what if it runs into like a rock or something or an island?
Well, 500 miles from nowhere, that ain't, you know. Yeah, quite seriously, this is something that happens on a fairly regular basis.
I know I've read that these people that go across around the world in a sailboat by themselves put it on some sort in a sailboat. They put it on some sort of oil. Every time I've been on a sailboat, I mean, I haven't been on very many times, it seems like you're messing with that thing every 2 minutes.
Well,
how do you go to sleep and have the thing just go one direction?
Well, my boat had an autopilot. But of course, you're out of your mind to turn it on and leave the bridge. But you could. I mean, it's a switch.
Well, obviously, if you're the only person on a boat, you got to sleep sometime.
Well, this is, you know, an extraordinarily dangerous thing, because if the other guy is not paying attention, you're not paying attention, well, guess what? Very bad things have this way of happening. But to me, one of the things that shocks me about this little thing is what is the response? Because here's the thing, a blockade's only effective if it's enforced, right? If you let things through, then it's pointless. If 90% of the transactions, and we know this has been the case, have been with China and India, both, I mean, China's a nuclear-armed state. What leads America to believe that China's reaction to this isn't going to be send a couple of frigates?
Two people that... This is why I'm sort of so concerned about this whole mess, Carl, and part of it is because of the varying people I have on the show, you get bits and pieces from all kinds of different angles. And, you know, from what I know about inflation, because I was around the first time, by the way, it's not the same, because this time the interest rates did not go up and cover it, which is still bizarre.
Yet.
So it's not
Yet.
It's not the same. Well, but still, for a long time it hasn't.
Well, that's right. And by the way, that's where Pavlov's dog reaction comes from, too, right?
Well, okay. But, I mean, for 10 years, if you had your money in the bank, you didn't match inflation. Actually, 20 years. So
absolutely
so
true.
On the one hand, we've got a country that's broke, meaning us, even though we say we're doing fine.
Yeah, okay.
the people that are other than China, and by the way, China, as much as we keep saying how much we hate them, we still owe them what, $800 billion?
Right.
So if we screw China, and we're in the process of screwing Japan with these oil prices,
right?
And even though Britain has some of their own oil, We're screwing Britain to a large extent. And oh, by the way, Ireland, who's... I don't know if you weren't on yesterday. My brother was saying one of his friends, she's in Ireland, married this Irish guy, who's a great golfer, by the way. And she comes here every couple of years, and we get to go out to dinner and so forth. But I think she called Dan and said something about gas or diesel is now $10 a gallon.
Yeah.
The truckers have blockaded the...
I heard this. Yeah,
they blockaded like the refineries. So then the government is going to come out to break up the blockade, but the citizens have surrounded the truckers so that the army can get at the truckers to get them. Now, this could be Armageddon. Now, by the last time I checked, Ireland is one of our top 10 places at all. It's not probably American money and Irish banks coming this way, but still, how much are we going to try and destroy the people we're borrowing money from? If you try and put two to... This is like a nightmare that I feel like I'm going to wake up from.
Well, that's... Yeah, I'm more than a little unhappy about that.
Yeah.
Fairly obvious reasons.
You talk about everybody's saying, oh, doesn't matter, we're screwing those Chinese. Well, first of all, the Chinese aren't bombing anybody. Last time I checked, I'm not big on China, you know that, but we're the ones that seem to be causing all this problem everywhere. And by the way...
Well, now, hold on a minute. One of the things that has been happening... And you know, this is probably what led Trump to, you know, put this stuff in place, although I don't think he very carefully considered the potential implications. During the lead up to this and during the process thus far of this alleged war, China's been shipping perchlorate into Iran. Vessels full of it, okay? Perchlorate is rocket fuel. It's the precursor to make solid missile engines, solid rockets and solid missiles. That's what it's used for. Without that, you're not making them. Okay. Well, guess what? That's not really far off from actually sending them the missiles.
Well, okay, I get down to it. I'm not a fan of the place.
Neither am I. I'm just saying that's what's been going on, okay? So,
but we talk about, you know, where does it end? I mean, Lou gave this has got to be a couple years ago, Carol. Your memory's probably better than mine. Talked about because of the Ukraine situation and everybody's boycotting all the stuff from Russia. All of a sudden, their train system is going down.
Right.
You know, I know something about trains, and I also know that most of the Russian, because it's the vast areas, it's mostly one track.
Right.
I don't think a lot of it's two track. Problem there is if a train clunks out, now what do you do with it?
Right.
You can't get around.
Well, yeah, if it breaks on the in the middle of the track, you got a problem, right?
And now they had massive issues with roller bearings. Roller bearings are the thing that the wheels turn, and the people who make most of the roller bearings in the world are Timken. I'm sure there's other people, but they make the best. They've always made the best. Now, here it is 2 years later. Somehow Russia has somewhat resolved this problem. Now, whether it's resolved, or they found a workaround, or they did something, all of a sudden you don't hear about it anymore. Now, you can't tell me that somebody that we know, or we're not know personally, hasn't found a way to go to some place, to go to somebody, to go to Epstein's heir, and to get money from Russia to some place here where they're not supposed to do, and all of a sudden these guys got roller bearings. And you can't tell me that the somebody somewhere isn't getting some sort of switches for some hardware or something for these drones that somehow has an American name on it. I mean, and we're not going to go after those people. And that's what the problem with the inflation. The same people who are supposed to be monitoring this, meaning Trump and the gang around him, are the biggest beneficiaries of inflation.
Right.
And Trump with the stuff he owns. I mean, I got to believe that Doral's a much better deal if there's inflation than if there isn't, right? It's a fixed asset.
Well, yeah.
In Germany, in the Weimar Republic, the people who benefited the most were people who owned farms, walked down and said, okay, I just paid off my mortgage. Well, wait a minute. That money's not worth anything. Wait a minute. Here's my contract. It says I need to pay you back. I'm paying you back. I bet those people still own the farms. And I bet a couple of them are probably Trump's distant relatives. He learned well. You know, I mean, the apple does not fall far from the tree, does it?
I mean, that is an issue.
By the way, do we have Hal around someplace?
We do. He's here.
How come if we're talking so much about money and stuff, and we're talking about his studies, he didn't pop up?
Hey, come on. I'm listening.
So what did you think about...
I'm driving. I'm actually driving the family back to North Carolina right now.
Ah.
Well, maybe you should hang out a bit, Carl, in case he has to stop for gas and pay up.
Well, you know, I'll poke my cell phone mute and see how long I last.
We're
actually getting ready to get on to Staten Island.
We know how frugal Carl is. If he sees a gas price, he might have a grabber. I hope not.
Well, I'll tell you, gas prices are higher here in New York, man.
What are they?
We rented this 12-passenger van for my wife's 50th birthday bonanza this weekend. We started Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday it was like a family dinner at the Olive Garden on the way to the JFK airport. And everybody in the family, you know, my brother-in-law, my three brother-in-laws, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, our family was able to pile into this thing.
You must look like the Clampets.
No, it's a nice van. I rented it on Toro, and it has 12 passenger seats, but I had the last row taken out so I could put a bed down there to make the ride more comfortable for my wife. I'm doing all the driving on this trip.
Who's your navigator? One of the kids?
My son Joe, but he's on his phone.
God.
So he's not doing a very good job navigating. I have GPS on my phone, so I that's how I'm navigating.
So nobody has... Don't tell me, let me guess. You don't have, like, a map in the thing, do you?
I have my phone. I Google Maps goes around all the time.
I mean, you don't have, like, a regular map anywhere in this truck.
Oh, no, I don't do maps anymore. I used to do maps. I used to memorize maps, street maps. When I go visit a city, I'd memorize all the major arteries, and I could get around like Portland or Seattle better than my friends who were living there for like 5 years. Because I just memorized the map. It didn't take me long to memorize the map. In Paris on our honeymoon, I memorized the map, and we never had to use taxi cabs. We just walked everywhere. We were right in the center on the south side of the river, and we had a bridge on one side and a bridge on the other side that went over to the Louvre and the Champs-Élysées. I had it all mapped out in my head.
Really?
Yeah. I'm really good with maps and directions. So,
well, that's always good.
It just comes second. It's just second nature to me.
Well, good. So did you hear our part? We're talking about how...
I was listening to the part about the ships, and when I was on the Navy ship, whenever I got a chance to go topside, which was really rare, I'd go up topside, and you couldn't spot. We were in a carrier group, and you couldn't spot anybody. You couldn't see anybody. It's really... I mean, for you to have a collision out there in the open seas, it would be like... a very small probability of hitting somebody. Now, if you're coming out of port, that's a different story, but I could totally see an autopilot on one of those tankers in the middle of nowhere because there's just no traffic out there.
Well, if you got 10 guys on there, all 10 of them got to be asleep?
Well, no. I mean, they're probably doing other things. I mean, I'm sure there's people in the engine room. I'm sure there's other parts of the ship that are manned, but when you're out there in the open seas, I mean, where the Navy is out there in the open seas going between Australia and Thailand, you can't spot another ship. And the only time you spot another ship is, for us, is when we had a supply ship come up and restock us. And we would...
How tricky is that?
Oh, you have to make sure the seas are really calm. So you only schedule them when you know for a fact the seas are going to be calm. But they shoot these lines over. It's really quite fascinating. And then they just use ropes, essentially, and gravity. They have a higher height than us, and it just gravity falls onto our ship. And then we had this huge long line of sailors who like a water bucket brigade for firefighting. We just water bucket brigaded into the storage areas. It's just like 400 sailors lined up. It's pretty fascinating.
Well, how do you do the fuel? That's the part I worry about.
Oh, they just shoot the same lines that shoot across to us. The big like 4-inch hoses are just on these metal cables, and they just lower the. And we don't really need fuel. We only needed fuel for the helicopter because we were a nuclear powered cruiser. So that's why we were always underway. Because we were fueled for 14 years.
Well, I mean, the aircraft carriers got to constantly load up fuel for the planes and stuff, right? Even if they're nuclear.
Well, yeah. I mean, the aircraft carriers do that, but, you know, we were in a carrier group with the Nimitz, I think it was, and we couldn't spot any other ship in our carrier group. I mean, every time I went up and I looked around, I wasn't seeing anything.
I thought you said your thing was too slow to hang with more of the carrier group.
No, we had to do a constant speed. If we are up the rack, and we always had to do like 15 knots, because if we open the throttles too much or shut them too fast, we'd have an issue with the reactor because our ship was so old in it. And it decommissioned shortly after I got out. But yeah, we could do 15 knots, and that's what a carrier group's going to do. They're not going to do a full flank all the way into the... I mean, they're going to cruise around probably 10, 15 knots at most.
Because they can go 30 or something, right, or more?
Well, yeah, but they're not going to do that unless there's an emergency, right? But there weren't really any emergencies out there. And we're going to relieve a carrier group. So when we get there is when we get there. And then when we get there, we relieve the carrier group. And that carrier group, you know, cruises home at 15 knots. So they're never in a really hurry to leave an area.
But 15 knots is what, like 18 miles an hour?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. I mean, we were zigzagging all the way to Australia because we had to go 15 knots, I believe. And it's been a long time, but I was talking to some of the ROs, reactor operators, and they were saying we had to kind of like cruise at a constant 15 knots, which made casualty drills a little boring. I mean, when I was on the ship when I was in Idaho at Naval Reactors Facility, being a staff instructor, when we ran drills, we had... we would simulate emergency operations. We'd answer flank bells. We'd answer full back bells. But on Truxton, I mean, we were really limited in what we could do.
Every time you say you never made it up top, I just shudder.
Yeah, it was rare that I made it up top. I mean, I think at one point I was in the belly of the beast for 30 days straight. All my mechanic MDiv guys, friends, we were down there for 30 days straight, and we got a little liberty in Djibouti, Africa. And everybody is white as a ghost. We didn't have tans or anything, and we have what's called a still beach party, because we normally have them on the flight deck, so we call it a still beach party. We had a still beach party on an actual beach near Djibouti, Africa. And everybody but me, because we were so white, we were in that engine room for so long. When we were out in that sun for 5 hours, guys came back to the ship with like 1-inch boils on their back. Me, I tased you, so I the next thing you know, it was a deep tan.
Oh, God.
But yeah, it was bad. I mean, we were there. We were in there for 30 days straight. It's crazy.
I can't even imagine that.
And then we didn't have any windows on our level. The officer deck has windows, but we didn't have any windows. So
you guys gotta be going stir crazy. So what do you?
We did.
What did you make of my assessment earlier about where we're going with the money and where we're going with this inflation and the reason why the market's going up?
It's not sustainable. It's just not. I mean, 39 trillion. I mean, by the time we have the next election, we're going to probably have $45 trillion, maybe $50 trillion in debt.
Well, we're talking $1 trillion every 100 days.
Yeah, I mean, we could be easily at $45 trillion in 2 years. It's nuts. I just looked at. I have this dynamic yield curve that follows like 10 treasury yields through time. They're headed back down, so somebody's buying them. I don't know who. Somebody's buying them.
Well, I mean, I think the Fed's buying them. They have the balance sheet going up. Maybe.
That's the problem we have, though, is the Fed. The Fed is the enabler, right? They're the drug supplier, right? And we're the drug addict, and they just keep feeding this heroin.
Well, I mean, the idea of Joel was just on. And, you know, Joel's on this market probably as much or more than me. He's talking about, you know, people are okay with what's going on in Iran. And it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with money being poured. I mean, last night, we opened down, two-something in the NASDAQ futures, and we finished up 4 or something, or 350. I mean, that's 700 points. I mean, there's got to be money hitting the table someplace.
Well, I think there's money hitting the table. I also think that the shock of this is kind of wearing thin. So the psychological effect is kind of working its way through it. A lot of tankers are headed to the Gulf. It's good for American crude oil, China. A lot of these European nations are going to probably start buying crude and natural gas from us. So, and American suppliers are more than willing to supply that crude oil.
Okay, but customers. The American suppliers are Trump's buddies. People who buy gas, it's not helping us.
Yeah.
I mean,
But Hal, think about what, if you got to go to work.
Okay. All I'm saying is our markets are really resilient. And if oil prices are high, they're going to bring more supply on. They're going to have to hire more people. So markets are really resilient. You know, even when there's restrictions by government, you have black markets and you have smugglers and you have people finding their ways around, because that's just the free market trying to break free a black market.
Well, that's true. But look, the money that you spend in the tank is money you can't spend at anywhere else. So, I mean, the idea that this is a positive.
I'm not saying it's positive for everybody.
If you own an oil refinery, it's great for you.
If you're working if you're working for an oil company, it's great for you.
Yeah, but for
not for me.
Else.
Not for me as a family. It's our budget. Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's it's an extra $50 out of my wallet that when I go on a trip somewhere.
Wait a minute. If you're working for an oil company, you're saying the last 2 weeks everybody works for an oil company got a raise?
No. I'm saying the oil company executives got one.
And that, I'm just saying, it's, when suppliers bring on more supply, workers, if they don't have the workers, they have to work the workers overtime. They're getting time and a half. So I'm sure all the people in the oil business are probably doing pretty good.
Well, we have
especially the executives.
We have president.
I'm not saying it's necessarily a good thing, but markets are resilient. If the government all of a sudden says we're not going to sell the country C, we're going to sell the country B, well, the person that was supplying country B is not going to supply country C. Well, These are world markets, so the banning the sale of crude oil to certain nations doesn't really work. I mean, if all of a sudden you start banning, we're not going to sell the country C, and we're going to supply more to B. Well, the suppliers are just going to shift. We have a world market here, so.
Well,
these government restrictions really don't work that well.
Okay, but if you start, this is the issue that I always have, because I mean, the people that I hang around with are sort of everyman. You know, I have a lot of rich clients and a lot of rich people I know, but basically that's wherever I'm going with that, it doesn't matter. The idea that somehow or another everybody is prosperous. And we, okay,
I'm not saying everybody's prospering. Right, I'm just saying the oil industry is prospering.
But I mean, we have, you know, president either doesn't know or doesn't care, credibility gap. We're talking about buy the oil from us. And I'm sitting there going, okay. I mentioned to Carl earlier, my ridiculous education is, how ignorant is that friggin' statement? If you're sitting there, if you go, okay, this is not going to bother us because we're self-sufficient. All right, so we produce 21 million barrels a day. We use 21 million. So somebody who's a dummy might actually believe the guy and say, we're out of this loop. Now all of a sudden he says, no, wait a minute, we'll be happy to sell you some. All right, okay, now the minute we do that, now if we sell 2 million a day and we're using 21, now we're 2 million short. Now the only way you make that up is to raise the price to where, the not the demand, but the quantity demanded goes down because the price goes up so much.
Yeah.
Okay, so
But also they're going to bring on more supplies.
No, they're not.
Old wells that aren't profitable at 70 are going to be profitable at 100.
Okay, but
so
it's
bring on some supplies.
It's a long term situation.
Yeah.
I mean, it will take a year or two. And oh, by the way, some of the areas that our biggest chunk is coming from, I don't know if you noticed, you know, not a lot, but a little bit. The last 3 months, our oil production has dropped a little bit, even though the prices are going up. Now, why is that? Well, North Slope is running out of gas, literally. The Bakken has kind of topped out. And now lately it appears that the Permian, instead of continuing to grow to cover the other people, has sort of stopped growing. So there are limits to this. It's not like everybody's backyard has oil. I mean, there's reasons.
I mean, I don't know enough about the oil industry to really get into it, but I do know that some wells are turned off when.
Well, I mean, if you go,
oil prices are $70 a barrel.
If you run it up to,
turn them on when it's 100.
If you run it up to $400 a barrel, we have tar sands in the Rockies.
Yeah.
Okay, but now are people going to be happy with tearing down mountains like they do and making these huge scars on Earth to get oil?
Well, I guarantee the big oil companies are lobbying Congress for restrictions on development unless they're doing it.
Oh yeah.
Because they don't want the competition. And when crude oil prices get really, really high, entrepreneurs want to roll the dice and stick their nose in there and poke some holes in the ground and drill from some oil. And so I think a lot of the environmental restrictions are driven by the big oil companies because they want to limit the competition. They want the crude oil price to be high.
Yeah.
But they don't want anybody poking holes in the ground.
Well, that's right.
But them.
Well, there was a...
And that's... Carl, you were on years ago.
I know I sent it to you. God bless. I could probably send another computer. There was a study. I was going to say a guy, but I don't think one guy did it. When the fracking started to really ramp up before they found the Permian, when they found all bazillion gallons of oil, there was a guy who did one of these interactive maps. Showed everywhere that you could possibly get some fracking going. And it started in Pennsylvania, and then it got to northeast Ohio, maybe central north Ohio, a little bit in Indiana, and actually quite a bit in southern Illinois. talking about it, and it was one of those maps that got purple as the price of oil went up. And there was all kinds of debate in Illinois, because people are always trying to screw everybody. The oil companies wanted to come into southern Illinois, and they said, okay, we need to come in, but by the way, we need bridges that, you know, can hold 90 gazillion tons, not what you have now. And the state was going to force the counties and the cities to pay for all these upgraded bridges so the oil companies come in, and the oil companies weren't going to give the towns anything. You know, but then the next thing is oil went to...
American corporations are great at lobbying Congress to cover expenses, their expenses.
One of you guys is going to remember this time period, because oil went to like 120, I don't know, it was another war, and all of a sudden, the next graph was every one of these pages, all the purple went to red, went to zero. I don't think there ever was a fracking thing drilled in southern Illinois. I think they all retreated from northeast Ohio. There might be a couple. But all of a sudden, there was no development anywhere. So, yeah, you're right. There is some oil that if you went to $200 a barrel that you could get in places that you and I don't know about. But, I mean, the oil people do. I mean, you could get some oil out of southern Illinois at $200 a barrel or $300. How much? I don't know. And if the oil went back down to $100, they all go out of business? Probably. So, yeah, it's there, but it's still not the same as a president saying, well, we'll sell yours, we'll run our prices up here, there's no problem. Yeah, there's a problem.
Yeah, there's a problem, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what also is going to happen is they're going to build more pipelines to the Red Sea. I don't know why they haven't done that in the past, but they're going to run pipelines. They have a pipeline that goes from the Persian Gulf across Saudi Arabia to the Red Sea.
One of them.
They're probably going to do more of that.
One.
Yeah. What I'm saying is they're probably going to do more of that because, you know, I understand why they don't have more running out of the Red Sea instead of the Persian Gulf.
Well, I mean,
they need an option just in case Mullah closes it down.
All right, how exposed is a pipeline?
Yeah, yeah. Well, everybody knows where our pipelines are in America.
Okay, but I read some article that we were talking about. It's not about if you want to destroy Saudi Arabia, you don't nail it. Well, you could nail the oil pipeline. They have several water pipelines from the desalination plants to the city.
Yeah.
So if you hit one of those,
that'd probably do more damage.
I'd say if you hit one of those,
line. Yeah.
Those guys are they're you know up yeah. Bleep Creek, you know, up Bleep Creek without a paddle.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
I had a friend in high school whose dad worked on desalination plants in Saudi Arabia. He rarely saw him. He was always in Saudi Arabia. He'd come home like every 6 months.
Well, those are all. Are they?
This is like 1985.
And are they the original ones power generated or were they all filtered?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure how that
they're all filtered
works.
Now, I think. Yeah. They use
maybe, yeah. We used steam to heat the water and just basically distill it and condense it. So
how did
that's
you,
what we did on the ship.
By the way, PPI's out.
And
how's it look?
Warm.
Three,
rather,
four.
Rather, no. Well, remember, you know, less food, energy, trade services.
Yeah.
12 month run rate 3.6, which is the largest 12 month advance since November. Now that takes the energy spike out, which of course is, you know.
So it's even worse.
Well, I mean, if you count that, it's smoking.
Four.
It's not warm. It's smoking. Right.
Yeah.
So I mean,
what's the month over month?
Well, the 12-month change on final demand goods is plus 5, but that of course includes, you know, the fuel stuff. The final demand total up 0.5%. So that's, you know, yeah,
that's less than the last couple of months.
No, it was the same as February.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean that's you know. That's something like 7%. So yeah, that's a, you know, on an annualized basis. So that's a big deal.
Yeah.
But assuming that run rate,
it's not surprising given that money's growing about 4 or 5% a year.
No, and the thing is that the, you know, I mean, obviously you have a huge spike in energy, final demand goods on the energy side up 8.5. So I mean that's an ouch, right? But transportation warehousing on the services side is up substantially, and that's, you know, I've been talking about that one for a while. That's not a,
you know, a one-off by any stretch of the imagination. So, yeah, it's not so good.
I thought last month was like a one.
No, last month on a 12-month basis was 3.4.
No, I'm talking about the 1 month.
Oh, the 1 month. No, February, the total was 0.5.
Okay.
Same as this month. But less food, energy, and trade was also 0.5, and this month is 0.2. So that's
February to March?
Yeah, so there may be some demand destruction.
Well, final demand good in February was 1, now it's 1.5. That's services they got going down, which I don't... You don't have any lawyers who lowered their price?
Well, final demand, goods 1.6. It was 1.0 last month in February. And
so if somebody's earnings is up 4%, it's basically up 0 if you account for inflation.
Yeah. Exactly.
So anytime somebody says, Walmart sales is up 4%, well, when you factor inflation, they're flat.
Well, right. here's the bad news. Processed goods for intermediate demand, March number plus 2.6.
What are those exactly?
Well, that's stuff that's in the middle of the pipeline that hasn't, you know, come out the other end of the goose yet. But of course, that, you know, large part of that is energy goods. Plus 11.3, boy, that, ow.
Yeah.
All right, that's a number. But then less food and energy is plus 0.7, which not, you know, annualize that out, okay?
What is in there?
And then foods and feeds are up big, too, and there's a problem there because, you know, that you shouldn't have seen yet from a state, you know, because energy inputs, of course, are a factor, right? But they're a factor down the road. The tractor doesn't impact the cost of, you know, the harvest that hasn't happened yet, but it will impact the cost of the harvest down the road.
What do you have any idea what they have in the services? Because, I mean, the thing that, again, a lot of the people I talk to on weekends, and obviously I spend a lot of time with Audrey and Nancy and people that are just getting into houses and so forth, and the cost of having people do work at your house... is there's no way that was down a 0.5% last month. I mean, it's like the one on the CPI we're talking about, used cars and trucks over the years down 3%. Give me a break. They're probably up 10.
Yeah, like hell.
Yeah.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't see how... I mean, right now, if you have anybody... If you have a plumber come and see your stuff, by the time he fills his thing up, makes the 45-minute drive through Chicago traffic to your house and back... I don't think you can get them to tighten a washer on a faucet for less than $200.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah. New York, that's really bad. My mother-in-law has some issues, and she was... What's going on is the guy that did her third-floor bathroom, I don't think he did a very good job. He probably didn't glue with a primer, the PVC, and it's an old house, and, you know, if the house shifts a little bit, it probably pops a joint. So now she's got water running down the wall.
I told her,
look, Mom, I'll come back during the summer. Just turn the faucets off. Don't run the water up there. I'll come back during the summer and I'll replumb it this summer. Because a lot of these guys in New York, I think what they're doing is it's so costly and their margins are so small that they don't buy the primer and the glue. They just put it together, you know. So I told her I would come back in the summer and replumb it for her. She was going to call a plumber. I go, Mom, don't call a plumber. Just don't turn the faucets on, because all he's going to do is turn the valve and charge you $400.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if you get something wrong with your toilet, you could not call a plumber and go to the gas station. But that'll get old there for a while.
Well, I think the toilet's fine. It's the drain line from the shower and the
I'm just,
and the
I'm
sink.
Just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had one of those in my basement that was, you know, God, it was, you know, shoved into a coupling, no glue on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one's, you sit there and you go, what the blankety blank.
Well, it happened a lot in my mother-in-law's rental property and in her house. I replaced all the sink plumbing in her rental property and her house because none of these guys would glue it together.
Well, that's the thing is that there's you're supposed to, when you know, before you get a COI and all this, you're supposed to stick a plug in the outlet that goes to the street and then fill it literally to the top of the stacks and let it sit for 24 hours.
Oh, really?
Wow, well, if you haven't glued
they don't do
any,
that.
I'm they, saying, they if you haven't that. Glued any, yeah, well, you're not supposed to be able to pass a final on plumbing without doing that. If you didn't glue anything and you actually do that test, you're going to find it.
Well, I think another reason why they do it is because nobody wants to really solve a problem. Like, we had a bug problem at our new house in North Carolina. And what I noticed is they want to just manage it so they can charge you a fee.
Hell, it's your own fault. You went to an area that has bugs.
Yeah, the South is famous for its mud and its bugs.
It's like saying I moved to Florida. I got this gator problem. Well, of course you do. You moved to Florida.
Yeah, but they don't want to solve your problem. They want to charge you a fee every month. And I think that's what's going on.
Long after we're gone, the bugs are still going to be here. So how do you solve the problem?
You know what's really interesting about the bug thing? I was listening to this podcast with this eco conservationist in California, and he was talking about how bug populations are dropping and how the trees have been affected by whatever's in the air. And he's trying to save trees in California. And when he said that, I'm like, man, I remember living back in North Carolina in 2004. The bugs were so big and thick. I'd sit on my patio and a bug would hit me in the head and it looked like a little helicopter, 5 inches long. I don't really see those kinds of bugs in North Carolina anymore, so I'm not sure what's going on.
Well, we
have this issue with bees and pollination.
You don't have any around here. You never see a lightning bug. You very seldom see a little white butterfly. I mean, they have issues.
It just seems like the bug population is a lot lower than it was. Maybe it's just me, but when he said that on this podcast, I was like, "Yeah, I remember bugs being everywhere. Fireflies being everywhere back in 2004 and 2005." In North Carolina now, I rarely see any bugs.
Well, I don't know how much
and
time
I walk a lot at night.
How much time you spend in Arizona? I used to go out there a lot. One of our biggest clients, we first started the firm, lived out there and had these gorgeous places. But and actually, one of the guys who traded for me, his step parents were out there. But you go out there, you love it in Scottsdale because there's no bugs. I mean, there's no mosquitoes. There's nothing. So it's perfect for me.
Well, that's like Idaho and Utah too. There's but bugs up there.
If you look closely at what is supposed to be the desert, the ground is alive.
Yeah,
I mean, so if you go build a house, you dig out. I mean, they don't have basements for whatever reason, but they dig out a little bit for the foundation of the slab, and you got to have a guy come over and put this stuff down there that kills everything, and doesn't want anybody to enter your area, but it lasts like I'm thinking 5 to 10 years, and then you got to get the guy out again. Otherwise, I mean, they're just there. I mean,
life is like markets; they find a way to live.
Yeah.
Markets will do that. Smuggling, black markets, whatever. The more restrictions you put down, markets will figure it out. And bugs are the same way. They'll figure it out. They adapt.
To get back to some of the stocks and jacks, and we don't want to talk about all the weird stuff Epstein was doing, although I do wonder who's compromised there.
I talked to my brother-in-law, and he thinks Jeffrey's in Israel hanging out, sitting in hot tubs.
Well, I mean,
I didn't disagree with them.
But I'm saying
I don't think he's dead.
I don't think
he committed suicide.
Do you think Kenny Boy's still alive from Enron?
Kenny Boy?
What was his last name?
Kenny?
The guy was a chairman?
Chairman of
Enron. He was Bush 2 used to call him Kenny Boy.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember him.
Yeah, he supposedly had a heart attack when they were coming after him with all the charges.
Yeah, he might be. He might be at a. I don't know. Maybe he's in a nice vacation in Gitmo. I don't know.
Well, the question is how. It's weird how we talk about all these different subjects, but I think we sort of tie them together. Where I think the news media, they don't want you to tie anything together.
No, they want to just divide and conquer. You got the left media, you got the right media, and they got their allies in Congress, and it's all one big game where they just try to tear us apart and divide us.
Well, but I mean, I think on a more basic level, despite people doing stuff on purpose. The reason why I like doing the show because I like my listeners, I like the people around here with me. But to me, I see these guys on TV or ladies, and they're not dopes. They'll do a huge report on three planes crashing. Okay, fine. And the next guy will do a report on how bad the weather was. And they'll never connect the dots. Well, that's why the three planes went down, you idiots.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
To me, it's not the story. It's when we do two or three, we have two or three discussions, all I'm thinking about is, wait a minute, these are all connected.
Yeah.
I mean, when you talk, everybody, why does everybody assume that the Cantor Fitzgerald guy went down and had lunch with his family at Epstein's Island, hey, Pops, you know that place you went for lunch? That guy was a pedophile. Why couldn't we have just gone to McDonald's? I mean, why wasn't there a McDonald's? But you sit there and go, okay, now what does Cantor Fitzgerald do? They are an international financier firm, whatever that even means, where they will take money from people. If you need a transaction where you need, you know, lira tomorrow or something tomorrow, lira, I mean, the Turkish lira, I mean, Italians are euro dollar now, but they do that for people. And that's what their business is. That's what Chase's business is. Now, but somebody, they must have a client that says, hey, these guys in Russia want to buy all this crap from me. How do I get paid? I can figure out a way to get a tanker, and I'll get something, not a tanker, but a ship, and I'll get the stuff down to Mexico on a train, and then they'll put somebody else's name on it, and they'll ship it from Mexico or some damn place over to wherever, Timbuktu. Now, how do I get paid from the guy from Timbuktu when, of course, we shut down their banks and everything else? Well, Epstein, clearly, his people had the answer to that. I mean, that's why I think the guy from Cantor Fitzgerald had lunch at Epstein's. It wasn't because he told his family, hey, go look at his horses or his animals while I go in the back room and find a 16-year-old. I don't think that's why the guy was there.
I think it has
to do with this guy is tapped into a system. Yeah. That even though we don't want to do this kind of stuff, we at least have to know how other people are doing it because that's our business. I mean, in my business, if I found out that people were trading stocks not on exchanges, I'd be horrified. But if all of a sudden 15 clients call up and say, hey, I hear Joe is doing all this stuff not on exchange and I'm getting better price, I have to sit there and what are they doing? I at least have to know what they're doing, right? I mean, I wouldn't want it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I don't think everything involved with Jeffrey Epstein was, you know, tied up in that thing he was doing, right? I got to keep my language kind of clean because my kids are in the car.
Well, I mean,
so
I understand it.
That thing he was doing, I don't think all of it was related to that. I mean, his job was to make these kinds of deals. And the interesting thing about Epstein is how he got a start. He didn't have a college degree, and he ends up teaching math at like this elite, I think the Dalton School in New York City, right? And he didn't have a college degree.
Well, and the guy
that ran the school is like connected to the former AD of Trump.
Was
right?
It connected? Or, it wasn't connected. He was his dad.
Dad, yeah, that's right.
That's pretty connected.
Yeah, that's crazy. So all these things are interrelated, like you said.
And you know,
there are things going on where these events might be presented independently, but they're connected somehow.
I mean, if we wanted the three of us, they say in the South Side, if we wanted to put together a network.
Yeah, Audrey says three of us.
Yeah.
Or three.
She denies that.
On our commercials.
She totally denies that, by the way. Absolutely.
Tell her she says tree.
Yeah, she's absolutely in denial. But if we decided, for whatever stupid reason or crooked reason or prurient reason, we wanted to have a stable of 16-year-old girls. And we got caught someday, and we served some time, and we were child molesters or something, and so we're tagged with that. I got news for you. Nobody's going out and having a drink with us.
Not only were we
perverts to begin with.
That is true. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you got people that are like presidents and heads of companies and everything. Can't wait to get near this guy. At that point, it had nothing to do with well, some people probably were there, took advantage of what was going on. I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
But other people, I mean, when Wayne's done writing his book, and you know, 30 years from now, if we're all still around, having doing the show, we're gonna be talking about this massive web that went all the way back to World War II or before, where all these people were these money launderers from. I mean, everyone. Barr's dad was. He was what? Was he British Secret Service?
Yeah.
He was something. Yeah. Maxwell's dad was a Hungarian Secret Service, MI6, Mossad. He was like a triple agent, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, this guy had all this money. He was supposedly this publicist in Britain. One night, the guy mysteriously falls off his yacht. Nobody knows how the hell he got killed. And oh, by the way, he doesn't have any money. He's got no dough. Everybody thought he was a billionaire. So, I mean, just the story behind that guy. Can you imagine how many names? If somebody, you know, somebody from the future came back and said, here's the real story about Maxwell's dad, laid out this massive document. The three of us going through that, it would take us a month to go through it. And imagine what we would find out. Who these people were, what their connections were, what money went here and there. I mean,
well, Tom, if you want to run the world, if you want to run the United States, one of the easiest ways to do it, given that we have 435 people in Congress and a president that seem to be at each other's throat every day, one way to get the policy tilted in your favor, because we have a mercantilist system, not a free market system, is to run these kind of ops, right? You compromise people, and then you get them on board. You say, well, if you don't play ball and vote for this one, we'll let you vote no on a lot of stuff, but on these key issues, you have to vote yes, otherwise it's coming out.
Well,
look at Swalwell. I mean, Swalwell, I heard this morning on the news that he was having an affair with an underage girl and a dude in a hotel room in New York City. I mean, and why all of a sudden did we learn about Swalwell? Well, there are five candidates, Democrat candidates, and they all are under 13%. The two Republicans that are running, they're at 17 and 16%. And in California, the top two vote getters are on the ballot. So there's a chance that the top two vote getters in California in the primaries are going to be both Republicans. So what do they have to do in California? They have to thin out the field. So it's funny that this comes out now, when apparently it had been going on for a long time.
Well, the guy who was running against close to home, Illinois, the guy who was running against Barack Obama.
Yeah.
He ended up went to a sex club in Europe with his wife. Isn't that what you're supposed to do? If you go to a sex club, you're supposed to bring your wife?
Well, Antwerp is this, it's got this historical tradition of being highly libertarian, and it was the center of commerce, like 14th or 15th or 16th century for like 100 years. And so that's just, you know, that stuff that happens there.
I got it. That's
kind of a leftover of that culture.
We're not kids anymore, but if we were 25 and you had a girlfriend or a wife, you say, hey, you got these clubs here. It's supposed to be pretty neat. What do you say we go over and see what they're doing different than we are? Yeah. What's wrong with that? I mean, why is that a problem?
To me, you know, it's consenting adults. I would never do it. But if they're consenting adults,
if you found out that they had a trick you hadn't found yet, you'd want to know what it was.
But you know, I don't care what people do in their bedrooms. I just don't. I don't care.
I don't even want to know.
I don't want to know. I don't care. That's their business. If they want to do that, that's their business. I don't care.
You were one of the most disappointed guys I know, and I said it's impossible to invent a new fetish. They've always been invented before.
Well, if people are into that stuff, that's their business. It's not mine. I agree. I just don't want them to force it onto me.
Well, you know what?
I don't want them to force me into it.
I don't want to do that. Well, who's the lady who, she's in, I haven't seen her too much on YouTube, but she's the young lady. She's, I don't know if she had to go to South America, but she's all over who's behind. She's like Wayne on steroids. You know what I'm talking about. Got the glasses.
Heidi Fleiss?
No. This lady's like a reporter, but she digs into all these who these people are and stuff. But she puts the people that were involved with the Epstein thing in a lot of what's going. These guys, they were the same people that did the stuff for Iran-Contra, and were never. I mean, Ronald Reagan should have been not only impeached but probably jailed for that.
Yeah.
I mean, and he stopped His deal with the Iranians.
Well, I think every president, though, can be impeached for that kind of stuff. Okay, but I don't think that's anything new. Well, I think that stuff's been going on forever.
He delayed the people in Iran giving up the hostages until after the election.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Iran-Contra, one of the guys I really liked in the Senate.
Well, honestly, I think what was going on with that whole thing, I think that was a CIA op. If you really think about Bush, Reagan didn't like Bush. He didn't want Bush. And Bush was CIA. Right. Yep. And then shortly after President Reagan's elected as president, what happens? Some guy tries to kill him so that the CIA's man can be the president of the United States. So I think that had more to do with Bush than Reagan, honestly.
You think? I think the more I read about the Kennedy assassination, I think Bush was involved.
I think Bush and CIA was involved in it. Yeah, definitely.
Anyway,
yeah,
the point is, I have
no doubt in that.
Well, the same thing that you sort of get with Wayne's stuff with his ladies. They're the same people. I mean, if you want to do some real dirty trick someplace, you call the same guys that are like the sons and daughters of the people that are on Contra that did crap in World War II. They're the same groups.
Yeah.
They never go away. And, yeah. And the question is, who are they? Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any question between what you and Kevin have said this morning. Kevin's been texting the same thing. That this thing with this guy in California, not that he's not an ultimate creep, the timing...
I think a lot of them are ultimate creeps, and that's how this whole op works, is you compromise them.
But how do you...
I mean, you compromise. You know, you float power, and some people, you know... Some people are obsessed with this kind of stuff, and they're easy marks. And as long as they do their, I mean, Jimmy Kimmel was in blackface, yet he's on ABC every night. And if he goes off script and he says maybe what he really believes, he loses his gig. So you compromise them, and then you have him. And you know, with the Swallow guy, I think he had been compromised probably forever.
But how do people? Not, no, I'll give a real quick family example. Half of my family's Irish, half is Italian, right?
Yep.
So they grew up...
That's a good combination, by the way.
Well, there's my grandma had six kids, three girls, three boys. And the boys are all, you know, big, strong dudes.
Boys and three girls? The Brady Bunch?
Sort of, yeah. And you know, there's a lot of people in the neighborhoods back in those days that were, you know, part of the mob and those kinds of things. And my... grandfather got the boys together and he said, look, these guys can be your friends. Never take a dime from them because then they own you.
Yep,
and
exactly.
Even though people that, you know, boys don't necessarily want to listen to my grandfather was a pretty smart guy. And my uncle's ended up being a vice cop, and he'd go to breakfast with all the guys in Chicago Heights that were the mob guys. I go, Al, what are you doing? He goes, we're just friends. I mean, I never did anything for them. They don't know
anything.
Well,
I think where the guys that preceded the mob in Chicago, they were probably protectors of their neighborhoods, kind of like a private police force in Sicily or in other parts of Italy.
Well, that's what they sold to the regular person.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point is why these guys like Hastert, maybe to a certain extent like Obama, maybe this guy. How do you not know you've been compromised and keep going forward?
Yeah.
I mean, if I was compromised to some extent, if you know, if I ran over somebody 30 years ago, which I didn't do, and somebody covered it up for me, and all of a sudden the somebody wants me to run for representative,
yeah,
at least I'm smart enough to know. Wait a minute, the reason why he wants me to run is because he's got me.
Yeah.
Do these people
at that point the best thing to do is just come out and just admit it?
Well, but how do they? Does this guy not think he was compromised?
Well, I think he probably was. I think he knew he was, and he was allowed to do what he did because they had the goods on him.
But did he think he was somehow independent and over it?
No, I think what happened is in California it's a one-party system, so that creates a bit of a hubris.
Yeah.
And then these politicians don't take questions from unfriendly media. They take some.
By the way, you lobbed that one out there. I'm going to say in the last 30 years, they had as many Democratic as the Republican governors.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not a one-party system.
In the one-party system in Idaho and Wyoming, I'm sure it's the same way.
I'm saying, I'll have that next week when you're in.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, you're in New York.
Actually, we're in New Jersey now.
All right, but are you around tomorrow morning if I need a cover? Because I might need somebody.
Oh, I can do tomorrow morning, yeah.
All right, I'll let you know, because Kevin has to do a favor for somebody tomorrow or something.
Yeah.
And he wanted to switch with Thursday. But Thursday, we have Diane Kelly coming on from the Veterans.
Oh, wow, nice.
And then Wayne's going to come out of here early because he's a veteran and was involved in some of that stuff.
Yeah.
So Thursday should be a very, very interesting show because...
Yeah, I can do either or both.
All right, I will let you know. I'll send you an email today.
Yep.
All right, cool, but SP Futures up 16. The reason why we haven't talked about it, it's been the same as when we walked in. Up 16.75, NASDAQ Futures up 130. Some stocks like Microsoft, it's been a dead dog forever, was up a bunch yesterday. It's up again this morning. So we're getting a little bit of a rehab, shall we say, in all these... software stocks. We'll see if it lasts. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.